Uncle Paul could use some coin.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 344, recorded on March 18th, 2014.
Welcome to the 344th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 177th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
I am Jordan Lund.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming flashback.
So, we're going to talk about what we've been playing, but I'm going to talk about what I've been playing first because... Now, I was playing Dragon Age Origins this week, right? I was doing a playthrough. And then earlier today, I tried to log on to play Dragon Age Origins, and it told me that I needed to enter the product code because I apparently didn't own it.
Okay.
And so I contacted Electronic Arts Support, and they gave me the usual spiel. We're dealing with this issue right now, and this is the third time in the past 2 years that I've not been able to play a game I paid for. Because whatever Electronic Arts does with Origin just torpedoed that. So I have to wait for them to fix whatever... It was an update on Origin, too. And the thing is, I'm just tired of being treated like a pirate. I'm pretty sure pirates are able to play the game right now. But I can't.
I think that's probably correct, yes.
So, you know, Origin is one big fat failure. And little hint to Electronic Arts. If Steam isn't up, I can still play my Steam games. You know, they allow you to play it offline without any connection whatsoever. They don't need to check in. They don't need to phone in. You know, well, actually, they actually check in every 2 weeks, but Valve claims that's a bug, that they have to check in every 2 weeks. But I think having to check in every 2 weeks is fair, you know, as DRM goes. But I want to play with the games I bought. I'm entitled.
I agree.
So do I.
Okay, anyways, I've also been playing a lot of...
I've not had any problems with SimCity.
Well, we're going to talk about SimCity a little later.
Dun-dun-dun!
The thing is that I've also been playing a lot of iOS games, mostly Ticket to Ride and Puerto Rico. Both are board game adaptations, and that's about it. How about you, Paul? What have you been playing?
I am still playing Kitchen Scramble. That's a fun game.
Okay.
I've also started playing Disney's Lost Light on mobile. That's a fun game.
What? Do you play as Queen Anne and... Oh, wait, no, it's Anne and... Anne's not the queen, damn it.
You're thinking of
Anna,
for one.
Yeah.
And Elsa, who is the queen. Elsa. And no, it is not related to any existing IP owned by the Walt Disney Company.
Okay.
This is a new IP, and it's kind of similar to like a Candy Crush of some kind, except instead of trying to match three, you're trying to build matching pieces and then match them. So it's you have to connect number. You have to connect the squares based on their number value, which grows.
Oh, wait a minute! It sounds a lot like Threes, which I've also been playing a lot of.
Haven't heard of it.
Threes has been around for a while. It's been a big hit. Basically, what happens is that you have this cube, actually this square area, right? And numbers pop in that are either number one, number two, or number three. And the thing is that you have to build multiples of three.
I think it's probably similar, but in this one you're not limited to only multiples of three.
No, but it sounds like it's sort of follow the leader here because it's been a big hit. I mean, Threes is very, very addictive. So I suggest you try that game as well.
Right. I just think I'd have more fun playing the game that I'm playing because I'm not as limited. If it always has to be in multiples of three.
Well, there's a reason for it. There's a reason for it. Anyways. You stopped playing Dungeon Keeper.
No, I'm still playing Dungeon Keeper, but it's really disappointing as a game, though, because it takes longer to load the app than it does to play it.
Yeah. How about you, Jordan? What have you been playing?
I have been playing 1040 Forms is what I've been playing. It turned out that we're on the hook for an extra $2,000 in taxes this year, so I have not had any time to play It's been a lot of figuring out how we're going to be paying and what we're going to be paying and all of that good stuff.
You owe that if you haven't been working and she hasn't been working.
Oh, I've been working. I worked last year. Huh?
People were out of work in that family.
Jen was out of work.
You were out of work last year, too.
I was on medical leave. That was a little different. I actually continued drawing a wage. So between both of our incomes and Alan turning 17, which 17-year-olds don't qualify for the child tax credit anymore.
They still get Social Security.
Well, that's a little different. But we have to pay $700 to the state of Oregon and $1,300 to the feds.
Well, he has to run, not walk, to college now. Last I heard, Davis wanted him.
UC Davis, yes, he was accepted into UC Davis. So we're going to have to figure out how we're going to be paying for that. I don't know if we'll actually be able to pay for Davis or not, but he was also accepted in the University of Oregon and has a scholarship that'll pay his full 4 years there. So,
Tell him to go with that.
Well, yeah. Or you can just have him go into debt and go to Davis and have college dues, you know. It's not,
what the hell does a semester at Davis cost these days?
Our share of it, Davis is offering a scholarship of $18,000 a year, and then we would have to cough up $27,000 a year times 4 years.
What, you can't get a Pell Grant or anything like that? Or
Pell Grants are a little different, and they would – a Pell Grant, if they gave it to them, would be like $1,500.
Yeah, but other stuff too. I mean, there's not just that.
Yeah, there's other stuff, and we're looking at different options trying to figure out what we're going to do. But
there's other stuff, but the realistic way to look at it is the way that Jordan's looking at it, because even if it doesn't come out of your pocket, you still have to find that money somewhere.
Exactly, yeah. So
no,
yeah, we've
he
been
would
playing
have to
we've been,
from his wages.
we've been playing a lot of 1040 forms and Excel spreadsheets is what we've been playing. Well, yes.
So tell him he'd better be ready to root for the Oregon Ducks then.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah, if he goes to the University of Oregon, our out of pocket is going to be $400 a year for tuition plus room and board and all of that stuff. Oh, so
yeah, tell him to go with that because I mean, dude, it was hard enough for me to pay off my undergrad loans. When all I had was like a 24,000 or maybe it was 78, but I mean, like it was, it doesn't sound like mine was anything near.
We're still paying off Jennifer's student loans.
I pretended to be dead. So, you know, being dead is a good tax dodge.
The last thing we want to do is have him end college, you know, $100,000 in debt.
But on the other hand, if he gets a job, I mean, that's six figures, that's then
expensive. Yeah, that's true. If he can get a six-figure income, then he's much better off. What he wants to do is get an undergraduate degree in tech and then do graduate work in law and become a patent attorney with a technical degree.
Oh, there you go.
Which I think would be fantastic.
That's a six-figure job, actually.
Easy.
That is a seven-figure job. I'm sorry.
I was about to say, please don't tell me he wants to be a game designer.
No, he doesn't want to be a game designer.
He'll hire he's
interested in computer security and patent law, and I think having those two things together, you know, the lawyers that are advising him as part of his debate club basically say that, you know, with that combination, he could write his own ticket.
That's what I like to hear.
Sonya would hire him immediately. They need people like that right now.
Well, yeah, and we talk on the show every week about these crazy patent laws that are getting passed that are completely unworkable because the people writing them don't understand anything about technology. Yeah, exactly.
Being in the Pacific Northwest sort of gives you an edge when it comes to tech.
Because, you know, absolutely. Uncle Paul could use some coins. That's all I'm saying.
So, somebody's got to pay for my old age.
Hmm. Well,
someone's got to pay for my middle age.
You're middle age already?
No, but it's getting closer.
Mm-hmm. What is the big 3-0 staring you in the face?
Yeah, don't you hate when that happens?
I love it when it happens.
I mean, it must have happened to you two or three times already, Jonah.
No. It's not as scary as it sounds.
No, actually, you know, 30 is the new 20, so. Seriously, 30s are the new 20s.
You're telling yourself that.
It's true.
I'm 40s are the new 30s. I'm 30 with like 15 years of experience. I'm like 50% beyond 30.
Yeah, but you're married, so you lose those mileage. So.
That's true.
Anyways, we're going to move on to now here's the thing is that last week there was something wrong with the podcast, and it wasn't a very good podcast to begin with. So rather than having you calling you back in and doing it over, we're just going to ignore it and pretend it didn't exist, and we're just going to move on with this one.
I was late to the gym for nothing? Are you kidding me?
No. Oh, you mean last week? Well, it's not my fault.
Jerk face.
Anyways, this week's
I thought this week's looked a little familiar.
Yeah, but this week we're going to go with one of the arcade games from the golden age of coin-op arcades. Go ahead, Jordan.
Gaming flashback, Wizard of War. Wizard of War, W-O-R, is an arcade game from 1981 developed by Midway. Other systems it was ported to include the Atari 800, Commodore 64, the Atari 2600, Atari 5200, and the Bally Astrocade as the Incredible Wizard. The title of the game is often misspelled as Wizard of War, W-A-R. The game was released as part of the compilation games Midway Arcade Treasures in 2004 and Midway Arcade Origins in 2012. Wizard of War is an Wizard of War is an action-oriented game for one or two players. The game takes the form of several maze-like dungeons infested with monsters. The player's characters, called Warriors, with an O, have to kill all the monsters. Player 1 has yellow warriors on the right, and player 2 has blue warriors on the left. In a two-player game, the players are able to shoot each other's warriors, earning bonus points and causing the other player to lose a life. Team-oriented players can successfully advance through the game by standing back-to-back, such as in a corner, and firing at anything that comes at them. Each dungeon consists of a single-screen rectangular grid with walls and corridors in various formations. The warriors and the monsters can travel freely through the corridors. Each dungeon has doors at the left and right edges, which connect with each other, making the dungeon wrap around. Whenever a door is traversed by a player or a monster, they deactivate for a short period, making them impassable. A player who exits through the door can pop back through the door immediately when a warlock or a wizard is in the dungeon. The enemy roster, all points...
Just go to various monsters.
The various monsters include the following. Burwar, a blue wolf-type creature. Garwar, a yellow Tyrannosaurus Rex-type creature. Thorwar, a red scorpion-like creature, also has the ability to turn invisible, thus it can only be seen on the radar. Warlock, an insectoid type creature, and the Wizard of War, a blue wizard. Normally, each dungeon starts filled with 6 Burwars. In the first dungeon, killing the last Burwar will make a Garwar appear. In the second, the last 2 Burwars are replaced by Garwars when killed, and so on. From the 6th dungeon on, a Garwar will replace every Burwar when killed. On every screen, killing a Garwar causes a Thorwar to appear. There will never be more than 6 enemies on the screen at once. From the 2nd dungeon on, after the last Thorwar is killed, a warlock will appear to try to escape through one of the side doors, ending the level. Killing the warlock turns the next level into a double score dungeon. The Wizard of War will appear in or after the 2nd dungeon once the warlock has been killed or has escaped, depending on how many men you've lost. After a few seconds, the wizard will disappear and teleport across the dungeon, gradually approaching a warrior. The wizard remains in the dungeon until he shoots a warrior or is killed. Killing the Wizard of War will also create a double score dungeon for the next dungeon. He uses a speech synthesizer to taunt the player. Through levels 1 through 7, the player is referred to as a warrior with an O. After dungeon 7, the player is referred to as a warlord, again with an O. The warlord dungeons are more difficult because they have fewer walls. Eventually, with dungeon 13, there are no walls. There are 2 special dungeons with increased difficulty. The 4th dungeon is called the Arena, and the 13th dungeon is called the Pit. The arena has a large open area in its center, while the pit has no interior walls at all. A bonus warrior is awarded before each of these levels. Each dungeon begins with a dramatic rendition of the 5-note opening from Danger Ahead, the theme to the radio and television series Dragnet, with the 5th note only playing on the double score dungeon screen.
Yeah, you know what's funny is that notice how all these arcade games just ripped off without permission these scores. I remember Vanguard did the theme to Star Trek The Motion Picture and Flash Gordon music, you know, without asking permission.
And
Wild West at the time.
What?
Let's not forget the absolute classic Spy Hunter taking the theme song from Peter Gunn. Mm.
Well, no, that they actually had to pay for it though. So, but they did use it. Did you ever play this game, Jordan? Well,
I loved this game. I played the hell out of this game.
Really? Wait. Yeah. Hold on. Someone's eating something. I've never played it.
I have something crackling. Sorry, that was my fault.
Okay, say it again, Jordan.
I said I played the hell out of this game. I loved this game.
Go ahead, Paul.
I've never played it, but it sounds, since it's in the coin-op category, like the game that I'm imagining would be a lot better than the one that they made.
Well, I mean, the graphics, you know, all of Midway's games had this sort of shimmer to them. remember, even Defender and Stargate, you know, all their pixels seem to have a weird kind of glow to it, and that's what Wizard of War was like. It was very blocky, but it was actually sort of like on the level of Gorf, you know? But I will say, you know, I played it, but I didn't realize that there were so many rules to it, you know, or at least it's a lot... The game used a lot more, you know, it's more involved than it actually seems to be.
I had a hard time when I started playing it because I kept trying to play it like Berserk and not touching the walls. And once I realized you could touch the walls and not die, it became a lot easier.
Yeah. So did you kill the other player ever?
I don't remember ever playing with the other player too much. I mean, that involved another person putting a quarter in.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have this on MAME somewhere. Yeah. It's an interesting game. It's like Gorf in that it's simple, but then again, you know, it has something to it. And, you know, the speech synthesizer was kind of, you know, it was sort of like a broken speaker, you know. It was very early 1981. So it's sort of like, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it was not Sinistar by any stretch of the imagination.
I live. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Paul.
Sony PlayStation honcho Jack Tretton stepping down, and this comes to us from Time Magazine. Ooh, a reputable news source.
Wait a minute.
In a surprise move, Sony Computer Entertainment of America President CEO Jack Tretton, who had been the face of the company's flagship console and entertainment brand for nearly two decades, is leaving his post effective March 31st. The new president and CEO of SCEA, effective April 1st, will be Sean Layden, currently the executive VP and COO of Sony Network Entertainment International. Layden, a Notre Dame grad, has overseen Sony's, quote, global marketing, network, retail operations, and digital entertainment services, according to his bio. He has been with Sony Computer Entertainment for over 14 years. Trenton's been the U.S. head of Sony Computer Entertainment Wing since 1995. The original PlayStation launched in 1994, so he's been the face of the company's flagship console and entertainment brand for nearly two decades. Quote, working at SCEA for the past 19 years has been the most rewarding experience of my career, Trenton said in a statement. Although I will deeply miss the talented team at SCEA and the passion demonstrated every day by our fans, I'm very excited about starting the next chapter of my career. I want to thank the employees, partners, and customers for their tireless commitment to the PlayStation brand and, of course, to our fans who have pushed us to new heights of innovation and entertainment over the past two decades. I leave PlayStation in a position of considerable strength, and the future will only get brighter for the PlayStation Nation.
You know, he still owes me money for finding those PS3s on the shelves.
He owes a lot of people money for finding the PS3s on the shelves.
So go ahead, Jordan. I mean, you're the most familiar with this character.
Yeah, you know, this is a very common occurrence after a successful launch. We saw it with Peter Moore when he stepped down from Microsoft to go to EA. But I just don't know what he's planning on doing. Usually when somebody steps down, there's some inclination, some hint as to what they're doing or where they're going. He's too young to just retire. So, you know, whatever his next phase is, it'll be interesting to see what he goes to.
Well, if he says
he should have a jack ton of cash lying around. I mean, after 20 years as the head of PlayStation.
Yeah, but there's a lot more cash to be found. Just ask Don Matrick. We went to Zynga, you know, and they gave him a $50 billion golden parachute.
And who's to say that he's even going to be involved in gaming? Maybe he'll go to some other corporation. Maybe he will end up running, I don't know, HP or something. You know, who knows?
But he says he leaves at a position of considerable strength, which, you know, that sort of speaks to me. He's negotiating with somebody and accidentally let the cat out of the bag.
It could very well be. I mean, you know, the PlayStation 4 launch was huge. It was bigger than any of the PlayStation launches to date, even outselling the PlayStation 2 at the same point in time. So, you know, it will be interesting to see where, you know, how he leverages that and what position he ends up in.
Yeah. On that note, and it's a news item I forgot to put in, but I found very interesting, and it's that the PlayStation 4 has started... It's starting to collapse in Japan. Every week it's halved. And I don't think has anything to do with the PlayStation 4. I think it has something to do with the state of video gaming alone in Japan.
Well, Japan has been on the decline for a number of years. I mean, they went from a peak of about 25% of the gaming market to now being about 11% of the gaming market. So, you know, that doesn't surprise
me. Well, there's two problems that Japanese video gaming had to deal with. One, there's a lot more people playing. It's a lot more global. So it's no longer a niche, right?
Right.
And
right.
Two, games have become very expensive to produce. I mean, way back when they were doing, you know, the early Final Fantasy, say Final Fantasy 2, 3, 4, you know, you didn't have to deal with 3D graphics. You didn't have to deal with any of that. It was just still tile-based for the most part.
Well, aside from that, player expectations have grown exponentially.
Well, I mean, expectations for what, though? I mean, the stories have always been there, right? But the technology behind it has gotten more and more expensive. And the thing is that they can no longer cater to a Japanese taste and retain that level of technology, right? They have to globalize. I mean, Square Enix saw this, and that's why they picked up Eidos, because it's a Western developer with a lot of IPs. So I think that's one of the reasons why the Japanese are so interested in mobile devices now, because now you can make games that cater to you, but they don't cost a metric fuck ton.
A metric fuck ton.
Yeah.
Way larger than the imperial fuck ton.
Or the regular fuck ton.
Yes.
So, anyway, one last thing about Jack, and that is he was not always beholden to the truth a lot of times. I mean, if you ever wanted a portrait of a corporate executive, a real-life version of – oh, damn, I forgot his name already. You know, the fictional executive from the Sony commercials.
I'm blanking on his name too.
Anyways, Jack Trenton was the real version of him.
Yes, very much so.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, some of the jokes would be, how can you tell Jack Trenton is lying? His lips are moving. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And this is an article that Paul pointed out to us last week. Disney Interactive cutting about 700 jobs, and this comes to us from the LA Times. Yet another, quote-unquote, reputable news source.
We must be moving up in the world.
Disney Interactive, the struggling video game and digital media subsidiary of Walt Disney Company, has cut roughly 700 I'm screwing this up big time.
Disney, start from the beginning. Work your way over.
Disney Interactive, the struggling video game and digital media subsidiary of Walt Disney Company, has cut roughly 700 jobs worldwide 2 weeks ago. The company has confirmed. The division is closing offices in Chicago, New Jersey, Colorado, South Korea, and Hyderabad, India. The layoffs represented about 26% of the division's workforce. Disney Interactive said in a statement it has, quote, considered several lines of business as part of the effort to focus the division on a streamlined suite of high-quality digital products. As a result of this restructuring, we have undergone a reduction in workforce. These actions were difficult but necessary given our long-term strategy focused on sustainable profitability and innovation. Disney Interactive, which lost more than $200 million a year between 2008 and 2012, is in a period of transition. The division parted ways with co-president John Pleasance in November, just months before the successful launch of his Disney Infinity video game. The planned cuts were reported by The Times and other outlets in February. In February, Disney Interactive reported an operating income of $55 million for its fiscal first quarter, compared with $9 million a year earlier. The revenue was up 38% to $403 million. Disney attributed the division's success to Disney Infinity, which has sold more than 3 million copies since launching in August. So, Paul, you're most familiar with the situation.
I wouldn't say I'm most familiar.
Yeah,
I mean,
you were
fired from Disney
Interactive. I'd say that you're closer to the situation than either of us.
I was not fired.
You were let
How
go.
Dare. He was downsized. He was not fired. There's a difference.
How dare you? Firing makes it sound like I did something wrong.
No. Well, wait. You know what? George Carlin would have a word to say with you. Would you rather say you were fired or downsized or let go?
I was let go.
Okay. Let go.
I was laid off.
Uh-huh. Well, being laid off makes it sound like you had sex.
That's what you call it when there are suddenly hundreds of jobs no longer available at an employer.
Yeah, my favorite euphemism is market correction. Anyways,
layoffs are one thing. Getting fired is something completely different.
Okay, you're personally familiar with the situation.
I am personally familiar with the situation. I was really sad. I had friends there still.
Yeah.
And you know, some of them didn't make it through the cut, and it's really, really disappointing. Yeah, but here's hoping that, you know, Disney Interactive can get it all back together. I mean, it'd be awesome if they could. They have, you know, they've produced some really great stuff in the past.
I know, but you know, they rolled the dice on some properties, like the adaptation. You know, Tron Evolution was a major flop. I don't think they were expecting more from that.
I don't know anything about the specifics of any title like that, but you know, I'm wondering if that's even such a factor here. Did they produce the Tron series of games internally, or were those licensed?
It was internally. It was Disney Interactive. You know.
Well, yeah, but Disney Interactive, whenever they collect a fee for licensing characters, Disney Interactive still goes on that title, whether or not it was made by anybody who actually
developed
by Disney.
You know,
was it developed by them, or did they just publish it?
I think
right, exactly.
I have to think that the purchase of LucasArts may have had a big, you know, big effect, you know, big factor in this as well. I mean, they spent what, $4 billion on LucasArts, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was something huge, and you know, they've been trying to figure out how to pay for that for ever since they did it.
Yeah, I mean, well, Electronic Arts put their foot forward and allowed DICE to make a Star Wars Battlefield game. Other than that, you know, I don't know of any plans that they have. I mean, it's not surprising when you have layoffs after a major acquisition, because that's usually what happens.
Well, yes, except it's usually at the division specifically tied to projects already in the works. So if, for example, there was, you know, yet another series of Star Wars games already half done, and there was nothing done on the Disney side, then it's more feasible to see that there would be, you know, layoffs on the Disney side. If, however, there were more projects on the Disney side when they acquired Lucas, and then Lucas was like, oh, we're just starting to plan these other games, well, then the layoffs would have been on the Lucas side.
Well, you know, that's exactly what did happen, deal. Paul. I mean, they had Star Wars 1313. They had the new Rogue. It wasn't Rogue Squadron. It was something else. It was basically an XBLA version of Star Wars Battlefield. That was also canceled as well. And they did a lot of layoffs. I should know, because someone I know was laid off. The marketing manager was laid off from LucasArts, and he's still looking for work right now. So, yeah.
Well, and it's not just limited to their gaming division as well, right? They're pulling the Star Wars license away from Dark Horse Comics and moving it to Marvel, which keeps it all in-house since they own Marvel. There have been other things, like talking about setting up their own Netflix-style service to provide Disney content. And at that point, they won't be, you know, having licensing fees and stuff like that going through other agencies. So
yeah, they've already started that. I mean, you know, buy a copy of Frozen and get digital streaming Incredibles for free on your mobile phone. I mean, it's
exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's almost Martha Stewartian in design.
Yeah.
I haven't pre-ordered Frozen yet.
I should.
You haven't seen Frozen yet?
No, I haven't pre-ordered Frozen yet. I've seen Frozen.
All right. Well, then I could tone down the moral outrage.
Just because I get the names, all I know about the names is that when you put the four main characters next to each other, it forms the name Hans Christian Andersen.
Does it really?
Yes.
Wait, there's Anna.
Hans,
there's Anna
Christoph.
Anna. Hans and Christoph. Oh, okay.
Well, you know, that's
okay.
That's their little shout out. Although I did read the Snow Queen, and the story of the Snow Queen is not very much like Frozen.
Yeah, it's not at all Frozen.
But here's the reason why. Let it go. When they made the song Let It Go, they realized it was way too upbeat to be a villain song. So they changed the story to match the tone of Let It Go. So instead of being the villain, she was sort of like an anti-villain, you know. And that's why the story was changed.
Just a poor misunderstood villain.
Well,
yeah, exactly. And you know, it does kind of fall into that same, you know, villains reimagined as wicked kind of spawned in the last, 15 years or so.
Well, in this case, it was just the coincidence, and they realized that if she was going to be a villain, the song was too upbeat for her, you know?
Well, it's also not what the song was about. The song is about acceptance, not about being evil.
It's not about acceptance. It's about not caring about being accepted anymore.
No, it's about accepting yourself.
I think you should read the lyrics, but we're not going to go into Frozen discussion here. This is a video game podcast.
I think you should listen to it again.
I've been rehearsing it. I've listened to it a lot. So anyway,
teaser news leak.
I just think it's interesting that they did two movies like that back to back, because if you go back and look at Wreck-It Ralph, it's a very similar theme.
Misunderstood villain.
That is correct.
We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Jordan. This is you.
Got it. New Xbox Live updates coming in April. This comes to us from Xbox.com. Major Nelson announced that new Xbox Live updates will be arriving in April, according to the Post. Today, we are excited to share the next wave of features that we will begin to roll out. These features will become available to members getting the early previews in the coming days and weeks, and will be available to the full Xbox Live community in April. Game and app saves and updates. A game save progress bar will show you the status of your game saves. You'll also be able to easily tell what games and apps are being updated or have been updated recently. Friends improvements. Notifications will be added to see when favorites and friends sign into Xbox Live. This is actually one of the most frequently requested features from the first preview wave, and we made it a high priority to include it in the April update. Also, friends who are in multiplayer will be identified in the friends list. We will also add the ability to view friends' most popular apps. Kinect voice and motion improvements will continue to fine-tune the quality and reliability of Xbox One commands. Improved game DVR video quality through compression algorithm improvements. And we are extending more invitations to Xbox Live members around the world in our current 13 Xbox One markets. New invitees will be sent an Xbox Live message to register. Once registered, you will be able to test the early features included in the update and provide feedback on a private forum.
Now, I just want to say, friend improvements, this is sort of like, going backwards here. Yeah, we really did like it on the Xbox 360 and also the Xbox when our friends came in, and it would pop up and notify us when our friends came in or when they were in multiplayer and stuff like this. This is sort of like backwards, this is going backwards, not backwards, but it's like, yeah, remember that? Remember when you...
Jonah Falcon is online.
Yeah, I mean... People liked being able to know when people, their friends were popping in, not make it a mystery, and especially with Titanfall, because you want to know when your Titanfall partners log in, they can't be always looking at your friend activity. So, Jordan?
No, that's absolutely true. And, I'm just surprised at how backwards Xbox Live is on the Xbox One compared to where it was, where it ended on the 360. You would think that they would take everything they learned from the Xbox Live on the 360 from 2006 to 2013 and just start from there with the Xbox One. But it's like they forgot the entire six-year history of Xbox Live.
Well, you know what Jack Tretton would have said? He would have said it was last-gen technology.
But they don't come out with like HTML6 and then HTML7 every year,
Well, both the Xbox One and the PS4 don't support CDs. I mean, it's like, I don't know what they were thinking, I would think that you would take what you had and build on it rather than just scrapping it and experimenting with new stuff. And it wasn't even that much of experimentation either.
So neither the new Xbox nor the new PlayStation uses discs?
No, they use discs. They just can't read CDs for whatever reason.
Yeah.
As opposed to game discs, which are not CDs?
Music CDs. You can't play a music CD in either box right now. And even movie playback, DVD and Blu-ray playback was kind of an afterthought. And it is still being modified. The last firmware update on the PlayStation 4 was to improve DVD playback quality.
Well, you know what I like, which neither the Xbox One or the PS4, I don't think the PS4 has, is that when you watch a movie, then you stop at a certain point, you turn it off and you turn it back on, you get back to the point in which you left off. No, they don't do that. You have to start it from the very beginning again, and you have to go through chapters to get back to it. I don't understand what they're doing.
And there are no media remotes for either machine yet. I mean, I hear rumors that they're planning on something in later March or early April, but currently there's no, you know, easy media remote for either box either.
So the thing is that it was the most, you know, having your friend, being able to get a friend notification, it was the number one requested feature. And basically, I'm pretty sure people were saying, we liked it. We want it back, please. You know? And the thing is, you know, go ahead, Paul. I forgot what I was going to say.
No, I'm good. I said it.
Well, and what Sony is missing out on is the perfect opportunity to do cross-platform, because there's three different machines that are currently patched into PSN, and they could run notifications to any machine, regardless of who logs onto what machine, and they haven't got that working yet either.
Yeah, and it's nice to be – now, this is something new that, you know, the entire save bars for game saves and you know, updates when they're available. I think that's something that they probably noticed when from iOS devices, because, you know, when you have an iOS device and, you know, an app can be updated, you'll see a number next to it, you know, that says, hey, guess what? You can update me. So – anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, and Paul is probably – this is actually good that Paul's going to be doing this item. Go ahead.
SimCity gets offline play today. This comes to us from Shock News.
Shack News.
What? Yeah, Shack News. Okay. It's taken quite a long time, but EA and Maxis's SimCity reboot finally has an official offline mode. Quote, we've listened to our players, and today we are delivering against their most direct feedback with the release of new single-player mode, Maxis's Patrick Buckner said. According to Maxis, the offline mode now requires calculations to be done locally on a player's computer. Quote, gains on optimization to the glass box engine enabled this to be possible. The original online mode, which will be called multiplayer mode, which will offer leaderboards, achievements, dynamic pricing of resources, and cloud saves, features not available in offline mode. However, single player will let players control when and how their progress is saved. On a side note, the Diablo 3 auction house also goes away today.
So Paul, Is offline mode something that interests you, or are you just going to remain online?
No, offline is absolutely something that interests me. It really seemed like I was already doing single player mode, because what would happen was I would start a country, for lack of a better word, with several city plots in it, and I just wouldn't want anybody else to come in. And the reason for that is very simple. It's because other players would come in, play for 20 minutes, and then leave. And now I'm stuck with a used city slot, which I can't take over because there's some kind of bug where you can't take over any abandoned cities.
I wonder if that's been fixed with this update.
And you know what? It might be, but it just really seemed like I could only rely on myself. Which is a real shame, because a lot of the features in the game are kind of interdependent, such as, you know, I can build a bigger police station and then get more volunteer vehicles to send over to my neighbor's town.
Or you can collaborate and get public projects like an airport.
Well, right. Yeah, exactly. But you could do that all on your own as well. Like, that's what I started doing. Like, I would just get a country, make several cities, and just have each of my individual cities start pumping into that same great work. But the problem is with things like the volunteer system was that, like, if the other person never signs on to play, then you never get that volunteer fund. It's really bothersome. I mean, it's no, and at that point it's like, well, that was a bait and switch. Now I have this giant police station for no reason.
Okay, Paul, I mean, not Paul, I mean, Jordan, with your opinion, go ahead.
I'm not a SimCity fan, but, you know, my wife actually did not buy SimCity after buying SimCity 3 and every single SimCity 3 expansion she could possibly find, simply because she was...
Not even SimCity 4?
I don't know about 4.
There was no SimCity 3. Maybe you're thinking about SimCity 3000.
I might be... whatever the last SimCity was...
SimCity 4 was the last one.
The one she bought.
Yeah.
You know, the she intentionally avoided the current version simply because it is online all the time. And, you know, I don't know if she's aware that this change happened today. I need to talk to her and see if she's had a chance to find this out. We might be going down to Best Buy or something. I don't know.
Well, you could download the whole thing. I mean, I'm not a fan of downloading games, but you can download the whole damn thing.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that it's interesting that ever since John Riccitiello, you know, Electronic Arts reversed a lot of its policies. Like when they announced The Sims 4, they made it a point to tell people this is going to be an offline experience.
Right.
You know, and they underlined that as much as they can. You know, like say, guess what? We're changing things. You know, we're changing it.
Yeah, I found that interesting. And I remember the discussions we had on SimCity back when they first announced that it was online only and how integrated it is to online. This game was designed for online.
And then people hacked it and showed it could be played offline.
Well, people hacked it. But even before it hacked it, you and I and Paul, we were all here sitting calling bullshit on the entire thing. And the same thing with the auction house in Diablo 3. It was completely unnecessary and, you know, was a detriment to the game, and it's a good thing that it's gone.
Yeah, well, the thing about that was that it completely borked the economy of Diablo 3. You know, it was not only you know, a naked cash grab, but the game became so distorted that it was actually not fun to play for a lot of people. And what you're playing, Jordan, you know, is what the game should have been. You know, the console version, which is also going to be the PC version. Well, the PC version has been like that since they said they were going to shut down the auction house, you know.
Right.
And it's funny because, you know, I think – remember how pissy the developer, the lead developer, I forgot his name, Jay West, I think it was, got at the criticism about SimCity 3 from the guys who did the one guy who worked on SimCity 2?
Right.
And I think, you know, I know Paul – defended Mr. West by saying, you know, you really don't want to, you know, you don't want to, it's not very seemly for someone to criticize your work. But I also think that the developer of Diablo 3 in the back of his head knew that what he was ordered to do from upstairs was distorting Diablo 3 and not making it a fun game. And, you know, there was nothing he could do about it.
Yeah, I mean, when two people are currently employed by the same company.
Well, the first guy wasn't. It was no longer employed, I don't think.
It's just kind of bad form. I mean, there are lots of decisions that everybody gets handed down from somewhere above them. And, you know, complaining about them and pinning them on somebody else, I don't know. It just seems tacky.
But the thing is that, you know, the worst part is that he knows it's bad, but he has to act like it's the best thing ever. You know? Like, yeah, it's really, really fun, all the while thinking, this is ruining the game, you know? And it's very hard to defend something that you really don't believe in. So, I still haven't played the SimCity reboot. I see it all the time at GameStop. I may try to check it out now.
I think it's fantastic.
Well, here's the thing is that if I do it, you know, here's the thing. I don't like having multiplayer forced on me. But, you know, if there was a multiplayer version of The Sims, a multiplayer component to The Sims 4, I would use it. You know, I mean, two games that were shut down were SimCity Societies and The Sims Societies, if I remember.
You mean Social?
What?
You mean SimCity Social?
Yeah, SimCity Social and The Sims Social, you know. Both shut down. Because, you know, because SimCity Social was going to be in direct competition with SimCity. You know, they're both the same game, essentially.
And in theory, they were. There were a lot of differences.
But the thing is that, you know, I know that you and Jennifer loved having your characters visit in SimCity, in the Sims Social, visiting each other.
Yeah, and that was a lot of fun. And it might be a lot of fun here, if I don't have to rely on Jennifer's continued interest in the game.
Well, no, I mean, well, the thing is that in a hypothetical multiplayer for SimCity, The Sims 4, would be that their characters just visit you, you know, and, you know, they visit your town, they visit your house, they interact with your other Sims, and then when they log off, they just leave. I mean, it's like having neighbors come over, except they're neighbors from a different computer rather than neighbors from your neighborhood.
Yeah, time zone differences. I'm gonna need to hear a little bit more about that.
But I mean, there is no such feature. I'm just saying hypothetically that would be how it could go. Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. This is me. Report: Microsoft working on augmented reality headset for Xbox, and this comes from Ars Technica. In the midst of the deafening buzz for the Oculus Rift, this year's GDC is loaded with companies hinting at their own virtual reality or augmented reality solutions. Microsoft is not among them, but the company may be working on its own 3D head-mounted display internally, according to a report from the Wall Street Journal. The journal cites, quote, people familiar with the project and people who have been privy to discussions and discussing Microsoft's VR headset plans has said at least one version of the device is focused on augmented reality integration with real-world images. That's not surprising given that the Microsoft AR glasses patent surfaced last August. Indeed, this journal's source has mentioned that Microsoft has, quote, has filed at least one patent for it so far. According to the report, Microsoft's head-mounted display plans are concurrent with, oh, I love this, Project Fortaleza, the code name for a breaking heads-up, hands-free device that was referred to as Kinect Glasses in Microsoft documents leaked into the 2012. The roadmap in these documents suggested a 2014 to 2015 launch for the eyewear that offered, quote-unquote, seamless integration of the digital world with the physical world and real-time information on people, places, and objects, perhaps integrated with head tracking and images provided by the Xbox One and Kinect. Sony has long been rumored to be working on its own VR headset and is widely expected to reveal more detailed plans at a GDC panel this evening, which is tonight, actually. Although company is officially remaining silent on any plans, both Sony and Microsoft would be wise to examine their own proprietary solutions for head-mounted VR, since Oculus has gone on record as saying the new consoles are, quote-unquote, too limited for its Rift headset. You know, by the way, this entire thing with Sony and Microsoft and the VR glasses reminds me of Dr. Strangelove and, you know, each of them worried about a mine shaft deficiency. You know, they don't have proof, but if it's there, they better be ready. They don't want them to have more mine shafts than us.
No, I find the whole thing really silly. And I think at this point, Sony's probably gun shy given how their 3D TV thing turned out. You know, if you remember, they tried to do a 3D TV for the PlayStation 3 and it was just a disaster from beginning to end.
You know, the PlayStation Eye has been a disaster. And that's basically what it would be based on.
The Eye, the Move, none of it has worked. So, you know, I just don't see this going anywhere. And as far as Oculus Rift saying consoles are too limited, guys, as soon as you get beyond 640 by 480, let me know. and then we'll talk. But right now, Oculus Rift is an absolute joke. Well,
didn't the 3DS have augmented reality games? And I know the PlayStation Eye had them too.
There are augmented reality games for the 3DS, the PlayStation Portable, which had a camera release for it in Japan, and the PlayStation Vita as well.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yes, it does actually have augmented reality games. They're kind of simple.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft.
From what I've seen, no.
Microsoft seems to want sort of like Google Glasses, you know? And the Glasses were supposed to be something you wear and you'd have a VR heads-up display, you know, in front of you, which would give you data as you walked around, you know?
Right. Using the Google cards. I don't know if you're aware of the Google cards, but those are kind of interesting.
But if you saw the patent image, it had two people sword fighting with virtual swords in front of you. So, you know, there are possibilities. The only thing is that, you know, once they perfect the Kinect, whenever that is going to be, you know, then we can trust whatever they're going to be doing with the Google Glasses. I mean, the Oculus Rift is basically a very jazzed up Virtual Boy, to tell you the truth. You know, all it does is present images in front of you.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know. I think, you know, it's interesting technology to look at. It was more interesting in like 1992 when it was supposed to be the future of gaming. And
Lawnmower Man, maybe the Lawnmower Man.
Lawnmower Man, yeah. So, you know, you and I and Paul have all been down this road before. We remember the mall VR experience and all of that stuff. I just don't see it going anywhere. And, if something as basic as 3D couldn't catch on, something like this is never going to catch on.
You know, Derek, the original, the lead podcaster of this thing, he would say, just let me know when you have holograms. I don't care about all that stuff. Just let me know when holograms are available.
Ooh, let me know when you have Gem.
We need the holodeck.
Oh, God, I could not sit through that cartoon. Sorry.
Well, that's because you have no taste.
No, the characters in that had no taste whatsoever.
Gem, Princess of Gem World?
What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, you know, Gem. You remember Gem, Jordan, don't you?
Princess of Gem World, yes.
No. Gem was a rock star who had a...
Okay. Come on, I've been practicing this one. Okay.
Go ahead.
Jordan. Gem and the Holograms. A young businesswoman and her multi-ethnic friends are crusaders for orphan girls by day, rock stars by night, spawning a world of fashion, intrigue, and romance.
It's basically a new wave of Josie and the Pussycats there.
I'm sorry. I was thinking of Amethyst, Princess of Gem World. That's a completely different character.
Yeah. I mean, it was just basically a jazzed up Josie and the Pussycats, really. Except
with child rescue.
Except there's no raven-haired Veronica, you know, and her cat. What? Anyway.
Gem is an awesome cartoon.
Josie and the Pussycats or Gem?
Gem.
Oh, didn't you watch Josie and the Pussycats?
Josie and the Pussycats was mediocre in comparison.
And I preferred it when they were in space. I mean, on Earth they were kind of boring.
You're 60, well, and you're resistant to change.
Paul's a little young for Josie and the Pussycats.
Really? Josie and the Pussycats. Come on.
Yeah, I was like two.
Yeah, hold on. Wait a minute. I watched the Super Friends, but they were reruns, okay? They were originally in the early 70s. I didn't watch them until the early 80s, and I was watching the... And Scooby-Doo, by the way, was in the 60s, in the early 70s.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jonah. Could your parents not afford to buy you new entertainment?
Oh, well, the new entertainment was the Smurfs. You know,
come on, Jordan. That was good. You were supposed to laugh.
That was good. Yes.
Thank you.
I watched Super Friends live Saturday morning.
Live?
Yeah. Yep.
Wait, that must have really hurt the animator's hands.
Having to draw that quickly.
It was awesome. It helps because, you know, they just animated the mouth. So, you know.
You know, I remember watching Isis. You know, and that was the poor woman.
Isis and Shazam, yeah.
Isis was the poor woman's Wonder Woman.
Yes.
I never watched Electra Girl or Electra Girl. Oh,
Electra Woman and Dyna Girl.
Electra Woman, I never saw that.
That was part of the Croft Super Show. That was a little different.
The only Croft show I watched was Sigmund and the Sea Monsters.
That was good. I enjoyed Land of the Lost. That was my favorite.
I watched it when it was on, you know, and it was okay. But it was Sigmund and the Sea Monster for me. Oh, and the new zoo review.
Okay, now if we could get the dinosaur fossils back from the past, can we continue on with the podcast, please?
Come on, everybody loved the new zoo review. It was Sesame Street without having to be Sesame Street.
And it was not part of Croft. It was completely different.
Yeah, but it was very Croft-like. Anyways, we're going to move on to the question of the week. And we did this one last week. We're going to do it again. At least Paul knows right off the bat that, you know, the answer to this question was, ever purchase new games for an unsupported console? And by unsupported, we mean a console that is no longer supported by the publisher, but people still release games for it. And Paul answered, if I remember correctly, Final Fantasy X for the PS2.
Yes. One of the best examples of the Novak game value theory I've ever seen in my life. I picked it up for $17. I played that thing for 130 hours.
Wow.
Much better than my standard good value stamp of approval, which gets given out for 1 hour per dollar.
And Jordan, your answer was
I've bought consoles for dead bought games for dead consoles lots and lots of times, including getting a Virtual Boy for $25 at Target and buying up every possible Virtual Boy game I could find.
Now, I wonder how much that's worth now.
I don't know. I still have it. It still works.
Because people, you know, you can't
eBay $25.
You can't use it for more than 15 minutes, or else your eyes just, you know.
The secret is to lay down and just kind of prop it on your face.
Oh, okay.
You don't want to like hunch over looking into it. But if you lay down and just kind of plop it on your eyes, you can sit there playing it as long as you want.
Now, I only played one game on it, and It was sort of a platformer. Was it a Mario platformer?
There was a Mario platformer.
Yeah, that was it.
That was themed for Wario, though.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. Yeah.
But I just remember that
as
was.
As long as we're going to be historical here.
I only played it like twice, so. It's very disappointing.
Well, the Mario game that came with it was Mario Tennis.
No, that wasn't it. No, it was a platform game that I played. So
right,
gotcha.
Yeah.
I believe it was
The Wario game was very good for it, and then there was another game that I'm blanking on the name of it. It was I have to look it up. Jack Brothers from Atlas was also very good.
And as for me, I bought the Dreamcast after when it went down to like $50. And I bought a lot of 2K sports games with it. I played the heck out of NBA 2K2 and MLB 2K2. So I got a lot of entertainment value from the Dreamcast. But, you know, I never really got any of the games that, you know, that you treasured for it, like Metropolitan Street Racer or
Metropolis Street Racer.
I didn't play those games, you know.
Fantastic game.
Yeah. Anyways, we'd like to know what games that you bought. And by the way, you can't include a PC because a PC is not considered an unsupported console. It'll never be an unsupported console.
I bought a bunch of Saturn games at the end, too, after the Saturn died.
Yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah, you're still waiting for that Fireman remake, aren't you?
I'd love to see a remake of I'm blanking on the name of it right now. But, I can't remember the name of it now.
It was Rescue Rangers was the Chip and Dale thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was not Rescue Rangers. Burning Rangers,
that's right. Rangers. Yeah. Actually, anyways, excuse me, I lost my page here. So anyways, that's the question of the week. So look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum or send us your comments to fans at gamingpodcast.net. You can also check out our gaming news at gamestooge.com. Also subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments.
iTunes comments.
Is Pinsanity still around, Paul?
Pinsanity is still around. Team USA's Pinsanity. Go play.
It's on Facebook.
It's on Facebook. Oh, and iOS and Android.
Oh, and by the way, you know, I know at least one person who listens to the podcast knows this, but just so you know, there is a gaming podcast page on Facebook that you can look up too.
There is?
Yeah.
Why don't we know about this?
We do know about this. You're friends with it, Paul.
He's trying to shill it. Jordan, you're crimping his style.
I'm trying to advert, Jordan.
He's trying to raise interest in it. Yeah.
It's fantastic. I'll buy 100. See how that works?
I'd buy that for $1.
Yeah. You can't say that without two people answering that, Paul.
$1? You guys are a cheap date.
It's RoboCop. Come on. The original RoboCop. I mean, I know they say it in the remake too, but I avoided the remake.
You know, I heard that the remake is actually not that bad.
No, here's the thing, Jordan. The remake is not that bad if you've never heard of RoboCop before. They should have called it something like Cyborg Cop. Actually, there is a Cyborg Cop, but, you know, just a man and machine. You know, it's they would have done a lot better if they didn't, you know, if they didn't try to attach it to RoboCop, right? If they had just some generic police officer is now a robot sort of thing, because the origins are completely different, you know. And the thing is, you know, he's a lot better looking when he's in the gray outfit rather than the black outfit, you know, the new black outfit. He looks better when he's, like, harkening back to the original RoboCop. We went way off the mark here. So
yeah, we should have ended this, like, 5 minutes ago.
We are going to end it right now. So
Jonah can fix it in post.
Yeah, what the hell is post? Anyways, we'll see you next week.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, Bonds.